So we are honored this evening to have our national president, Kim Charlson, from the American Council of the Blind, to give us an update as to what's happening with ACB. Let's give her a hand.
Thank you, Gene. Could people hear me? Okay, we'll get close and intimate here. All right, so I told Jeff, I said, Jeff, what did I do to make you put me on the night, 9:30, people are, but man, you guys, you don't stop. You don't stop here. You just keep going and going. So I'm going to talk fast. I'm going to use my Northeast, East Coast, and give you a lot of information in just a few minutes about some of the highlights of things going on with the American Council of the Blind. I'll talk a little bit about legislation, some legal activities, and I think you'll be pleased to learn if you haven't heard about some of these things. So the first thing I want to talk about is some of our legislative work that we've been doing in 2015. Some of you may have heard of the Medicare coverage for the certain low vision devices bill that was reintroduced in January because of the end of the previous session of Congress and the bill didn't move. It died, so it's been reintroduced as the Medicare Demonstration of Coverage of Low Vision Devices Act of 2015. It's H.R. 729, and it's been sponsored by Representative Carolyn Maloney, she's a Democrat from New York, and Republican Gus Bilirakis, a Republican from Florida. So it's to fund a demonstration project for coverage from under Medicare for low vision devices. And ACB's been working on this as a legislative priority for several years. And I think from Mitch's report, you know that at the state and national level, legislative priorities can often take several years to get passed. So we continue to work on that piece of legislation. Last month, H.R. 3535 was introduced in Congress. It's the Alice Cogswell and Ann Sullivan Macy Act of 2015. And this legislation is sponsored by Congressman Matt Cartwright, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, and David McKinley, a Republican from West Virginia. So it's always good to have bipartisan legislation, and this piece of legislation will dramatically improve educational results for students who are deaf, hard of hearing, blind, visually impaired, or deaf-blind. Cogswell-Macy Act will amend and modernize the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act to address the largely unmet unique needs of students with sensory disabilities. And this legislation would ensure that students with vision and or hearing disabilities are properly identified, evaluated, and served, especially when they may have additional disabilities. This clause is particularly important, I think, because so many students with disabilities, particularly sensory disabilities, are either classified by their school departments in the wrong categories, and then they're not getting the types of services that they need. So this legislation will also guarantee that students with sensory disabilities are provided with the full array of special education and related services they must have to truly receive a free and appropriate public education. The legislation also promotes and supports teachers and associated professionals who are critical to the delivery of such services and addresses some of the issues surrounding the shortage of teachers of the visually impaired in this country. And it will hold all levels of our public education system accountable for these expectations for students who have sensory disabilities. And I think that's amazingly important that we have high expectations for our students. So there, in the United States, there's approximately 350,000 students who are deaf or hard of hearing, and an estimated 100,000 who are blind or visually impaired. Now, we don't often hear that 100,000 number because we usually hear that there's maybe 60,000 or so that are counted by the American Printing House for the Blind. So that goes right back to what I was saying about accurate reporting of students with visual impairments. So right now, we're only providing services to 1/3 of the reportedly eligible blind or visually impaired students under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And that is just completely unacceptable. We cannot continue to do that and lose these students who have sensory disabilities. So this legislation is going to be a very critical component of ACB's legislative activities. All right. I want to talk about a recent structured negotiation settlement that was settled with ACB and our colleagues Lainey Feingold and Linda Dardarian, who do so much great work with the American Council of the Blind. So this is in the area of accessible prescription labeling. We just had a settlement announced with Humana. And Humana is a major provider of Medicare coverage for millions of people across the country. And they now will have available talking prescriptions through the Envision America program, the Script Talk, the Scriptability program, so you can get accessible talking prescription labels. They will also provide Braille labels for anyone who fills their prescriptions through the Humana mail order pharmacy program. So they are also providing information about their services, their explanation of benefits, and other information in accessible formats, large print, Braille, electronic, whatever will work for you. And to get access to that, if you are a Humana customer, there's two ways to contact them. You can use an email address that is accessibility@humana.com, or you can contact their customer service number, 1-800-379-0092. So I had worked for a couple of years with Lainey on the Humana settlement, and I'm very pleased to say that I think they were one of the best corporations to work with. It was kind of an exciting coincidence that the Legislative Council for Humana's grandfather was blind and was a Braille reader. And when we talked about accessible prescription labels, he didn't say why, he said, when can we do this? So it was a totally unique settlement experience because he understood from day one why accessible format information is so critical for people who are blind and visually impaired. Another issue, turning to the courts and some of the activity we've been dealing with, this is a long-standing case regarding taxicab access and discrimination of people who are blind who use guide dogs that the American Council of the Blind has been working on. It started over a year ago with Eric Bridges doing some work with a local television station and a couple agencies, nonprofits in the D.C. area. And because of the television coverage and the actual sting operation that was done about a year and a half ago that clearly documented repeated discrimination where Eric was passed by practically every cab on the street in Washington, D.C., that they would then pull forward about 30 feet beyond Eric and pick up a sighted person who just happened to be a cameraman for the local affiliate of ABC. So it was all caught on film, and the channel did a documentary, and that has proven to be the evidence that we have used over the course of the last year to file complaints. And actually, with the assistance of the Washington Lawyers Committee, some great pro bono attorneys have been working with Eric to file suit against four cab companies. So in early September, Judge Maurice Ross, who is the presiding judge over ACB and Eric's case against Yellow Cab, Grand Cab, Pleasant Taxi, and Elite Cab, he denied all four of those defendants' motions to dismiss the lawsuit, which we're very happy about. The defendants had raised several issues in an attempt to dismiss or narrow the lawsuit, and the court rejected each of the defendants' arguments. Now, I don't want to go through these really quickly, but I think it's worth letting you know what they were arguing and how the judge supported ACB and Eric Bridges. So the first thing that the defendants tried to argue was the standing for to sue for Eric. And the defendants argued that Eric did not have standing to sue because he could not demonstrate that he planned to use a cab from these specific companies in the future. The court found that the prior testing by Eric and the DC Taxi Commission, along with WUSA Channel 9's report, demonstrated that the discriminatory practice was widespread and that Eric did not need to show an intent to use a specific defendant's cab company in order to allege a threat of future harm. So that is very important. Then there was the standing to sue for ACB. The defendants argued that ACB did not have standing to sue on behalf of its members. So the court rejected this, thank goodness, finding that ACB can sue on behalf of its membership in addition to just Eric. So that allows us to be a class action plaintiff. They argued the sufficiency of the pleading. So I know I sound like a lawyer, but this is important. The defendants argued that we had not alleged sufficient facts to give rise to an inference that the reason the taxis passed Eric was because he is blind and had a service animal. So the court found that we had alleged more than sufficient facts based on the prior studies we cited about the problem and the facts that were specific to the four incidents shown on the film. So the court believed it to be more than reasonable to infer that the taxis passed Eric because he had a service dog. So that's good. The statute of limitations. They argued that the defendant tried to argue that Eric had not filed a charge within the requisite 1 year from the time of the incident. And the court rejected this argument, noting that Eric had contacted the Office of Human Rights in Washington, D.C. well within the 1 year time frame. So the defendants also argued that ACB's claims were not timely because we had never filed an Office of Human Rights charge and so had not filed a lawsuit within that 1 year time of the incident. So the court rejected this argument too, holding that ACB could take advantage of the fact that its member, Eric Bridges, had filed within the 1 year time and that ACB could piggyback off of Eric's charge. This is a very important holding from the court and is likely the first of its kind in the nation that will have ramifications in many future discrimination cases, in that an organization can now come into a case after the statute of limitations may have expired, so long as one of its members had correctly satisfied the statute of limitations. So that gives us a lot more influence in the courts to come on board as a class action organization. And finally, the defendants claimed that it was a negligence claim. So the court held that even if our ADA and DC Human Rights Act claims ultimately failed, we also have viable negligence claims against the cab companies related to the negligent hiring of and supervision of their drivers. So the case is, in fact, we believe, a complete victory on these motions because they were upheld. We will now move into the discovery with all of our claims alive and intact. And this decision will also have precedential effect on future discrimination cases. So this is huge for ACB and I think for the civil rights movement as well. So I'm very proud of this work. In July at the National Convention, ACB premiered a video called Blind Abilities, and it's a video about the working people who are blind who are working and their attitudes, their feelings about how important it is for them to work hard, and their hiring managers who say, you know, I never hired a blind person before, but their qualifications were so good. So it was intended to hopefully be used by your chapters to show ACB's work in this area. The video is available on YouTube and can be viewed free. It's available with audio description, with captioning. It's about 14 minutes long. And it's been picked up by several major corporations as a tool for some of their hiring manager training to dispel what we, I think, all believe is one of the biggest barriers facing people who are blind, and that is the attitudes of hiring managers who believe, how could we do a job? Because they're thinking, if I was blind, I couldn't do this job, so they must not be able to do this job. So trying to break those barriers down and educate hiring managers about the capabilities of people who are blind. On September 30th, you may have heard that Melanie Brunson stepped down from her position as executive director of the American Council of the Blind. And at the time she made that announcement, she was planning to retire. However, something came along that seemed to be of interest to Melanie, and as she and I spoke, she said she's going back to work in the area where her true passion was and where her roots started here in California, and that is in the advocacy and governmental affairs area. And at the end of October, Melanie will be working as the Director of Governmental Affairs and Advocacy for the Blinded Veterans Association in Washington. So we absolutely wish her well, and she will still be part of the blindness advocacy system and working on behalf of blinded veterans. Eric Bridges was named interim executive director as of October 1st. We are conducting a search for an executive director, and that process is ongoing over the next couple months. In the area of audio description, I think you all know about the audio description project that ACB runs. You have two very strong leaders in the audio description project work here in California with Margie Donovan, who chairs the Audio Description Project Committee for the Performing Arts, and with Susan Glass, who chairs the Audio Description Project Conference Committee and the Mentorship Program. So that committee is very busy, working hard on many different activities, and you'll be hearing more about that as things move forward. I wanted to announce that in 2016, our mid-year president's meeting and the legislative seminar are going to take place on a new weekend. We're moving it to the last weekend of February, which is February 28th. 27th is the board meeting for ACB. The 28th is the president's meeting, and the 29th is the legislative seminar, and March 1st will be the Capitol Hill Visits Day. This is incredibly important, and California is pivotal in our advocacy work because you have an amazing number of congressmen to visit and women. And so the support that you give to your leadership here in California to allow them to send delegates who can participate in the legislative seminar is huge for us. And thank you, and I hope you continue to do that. We'll be going to a new venue for our hotel stay. We're going to be staying at the Crown Plaza in Alexandria. We've been at the airport Holiday Inn for several years, but the Crown Plaza Alexandria also has airport shuttle. It has a shuttle that will take people to local area restaurants, of which there are many within walking distance, and the rates are lower, so that makes people happy as well. So overall, I just want to say that I think all of you should be very proud of the work that the American Council of the Blind has been doing over the last several months, and with all the work that you're doing here with CCB. In so many cases, California is the leader and the rest of the nation follows. And it's true, I've observed that this weekend and with your leadership as well. So I commend all of you for your hard work and hope that you're as proud as I am of the work of the American Council of the Blind and the California Council of the Blind. Thank you very much.
We can take a few questions Kim, if you'd like.
Sure.
So if somebody could get a mic to a person.
Yeah, Madam President, Ron Smith from California.
Uh-huh.
I had a question in regards to the lawsuit with Eric Bridges and his service animal. Now, we all know that's an issue with cab drivers, with blind people with service animals. But has there ever been a separate study done on just blind individuals, like using a white cane, dealing with cab drivers? Because we know a lot of cab drivers are foreign, and they still have a preconceived notion of blind people and, afraid to be around them or what have you. So I wonder if that's also an issue.
I don't know of anything, and if anybody else in the room does know, please speak up. But it certainly has not been documented that there's the same kind of issues that cane users face, being blind with a cane versus being blind with a guide dog. It's a very systemic problem for anyone who uses a guide dog to get a taxi pretty much anywhere in this country.
So no one's heard of any reports of blind people with canes being passed up by cabs?
I'm not aware of any. Once, maybe in a while, something bizarre comes up, but nothing that I would call a systemic problem.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
Have you worked collaboratively with any other blind organization, either Organization X or American Printing House or AFB?
Yes, and I was talking so fast that I left that part out of my conversation about the Ann Sullivan Cogswell Macy Act. That is in collaboration with the American Foundation for the Blind. They're key partners in our work in Washington, D.C., and we often work with them. And hopefully if there's, with our new relationship with the BVA, we may have some collaborative opportunities as well. So.
Next.
Apropos, Kim, thank you for that wonderful report. Apropos our Medicare demonstration project, I'm wondering, because it was a very similar bill which passed the Senate regarding a demonstration project for speech-generating devices under Medicare, a very parallel bill. I had not discovered its fate in the House, but it did pass the Senate. I wondered if we had been able to develop any kind of a coalition effort with the people who were supporting that bill, and whether, if so, that would increase the chances of success for ours.
I'm not familiar with anything in that area, but I will ask Eric where that is and what it is, so we can learn more about it and see what's going on with any kind of coalition activity. The Coalition for Assistive Technology, COAT, does still exist, and if there was something like that, I would think that maybe they'd be interested in doing some kind of collaboration on it. What's the number? 984? Thank you.
Any further questions? Was that a yes?
I guess
that's
not. That's it. Thank you very much.
Well, we got one more report, but let's do a door prize, and they will stand up after that, and they go to the elections. So let's do a door prize. A $15 gift certificate, Biskoski, and from the Gateway. Okay, it's, and what was it?
Okay.
Okay, well, we won't give them all. Okay. Yeah. Okay. The $15 Biskoski.
Okay. This is from Yosemite Gateway Chapter.
Okay, Yosemite Gateway Chapter.
$15.
Starbucks.
And homemade biscotti.
Okay.
Cam Shure.
Oh, heck, we'll do another one since it was out quick.
In the front.
Homemade biscotti.
Homemade.
$25,
I think it said.
This is from St. Gabriel Valley Chapter, $25 cash.
St. Gabriel Chapter, $25 cash.
Jerry Consler.
No.
He's here, but not in the room. Georgia Gail Miller? No.
Okay. Oh, come on.
Pam Hill Metz.
Are we all ready with the ballots and everything?
Is she here?
Already.
Okay, thank you.
Is she here?
I think she's Pam in the back?
She liked it.
Okay, so we're going to have our last presentation, and then I think stand up, you know, maybe, and move around for about 5 minutes, and then we'll start the elections. So.